from the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
Harder to Kill than Rob Liefeld's writing career is the off-panel podcast, the comic show where the tensions are high and the ink is fresh. I'm your host, John Lees, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sergio Martinez. And quietly jerking off in the background tonight is Matt Johnson. Yeah, he's quietly doing it. and we're joined by a very special guest tonight, the writer of Scam, the very talented Joe Mulvey.
What's up, guys? I mean, the jerking off thing in the intro is just deadly. It's killer.
Yeah, no, that's not true. He can't talk at all.
Nothing? That's how you guys are going to separate yourselves in the comic podcast world. You're the one with the silent guy pulling it.
That was just one of many jokes of mine that will be met by silence as well tonight. Yeah, so we've had an interesting week in comics. Did anybody pick up any books that stood out?
I'm actually very fortunate because I can say that every book that I picked up, I enjoyed, which does not always happen. Like, sometimes there's a book that's like, okay, but I really enjoyed all of them, so.
Yeah, well, it was a quiet week for me compared to last week. Last week, I picked up 15 comics, and I actually took the time to talk about all 15 comics in some depth, but then unfortunately the podcast got deleted, so
yeah, that was interesting.
Fuck it, I'm not doing that again. But yeah, so this week I've only got 3 books to talk about, but I think the book everyone's going to want to talk about is Batman 5, which was absolutely incredible.
Easily, ask our guest what he read this week?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Would you like to share with us, Joe, what you read this week?
Well, let me just ask a question. Did anyone else read the relaunched Prophet 21?
What, I've heard all about this book. It's something about Extreme Studios being revived, and this was
Yeah, it's the whole thing. I mean, yeah. I figured with Rob Liefeld being brought up in the intro, someone would have read it.
No, it wasn't even available in Scotland. I looked, I'm out of curiosity, but either it was sold out or it never came into the shop, so for some reason I couldn't see it anywhere.
I never read those Extreme books, so I don't have any attachment, so I guess I'll check it out when I hear from word of mouth how it is, but I didn't have any plan on it at the moment.
Did you read it?
Yeah, I'm a guilty... I did, and I really liked it, but it took me a little while to kind of get into it, because it's... I'm not a sci-fi person, unfortunately. Like, I mean, I guess certain sci-fi. Like, I'm not... Like, I've never seen the movie Aliens... Just because I'm
You've
not
never seen Aliens?
No, I know. I've never seen Star Wars. I know this is gonna come across. I just feel like pop culture.
Aliens is passable, but if you're any kind of a level of geek, you have to watch Star Wars.
I feel like I know everything that happens.
To be honest, I'd say Aliens before Star Wars. Aliens is the better movie, but yeah.
That kind of stuff, I don't know, it's never intrigued me. Like, you know, but then I picked up this book, and I got to say, to this book's credit, it was just page after page of unbelievably intriguing and new creative ideas. Like, I've never seen a lot of the stuff that was in this. You had, like, you know, a planet filled with all these different types of creatures that all had, like, they kind of got into the like literally the insides of the animals, like what the makeup of these creatures were, and all these new like sci-fi, like I've never seen it before, and it was definitely like a mind-blowing type of book for me, just from the complete creativity and originality.
So I
would recommend it.
I can see what you're getting at, and the fact that because you're not big on space stuff, you got into it, because me myself, I would say out of all the little mini genres that you typically find in you know the world of geekdom or whatever you want to call it, space stuff is always what is harder for me to grab onto. Granted, I like some of the Marvel cosmic, I like some of the Green Lantern stuff, but to be honest, I also don't have too much of a preference for space stuff. So I'll check it out if it turned another fellow non-spaceman, I guess you can say. So I'll check it out.
Yeah,
interesting, because like, all this space fare and stuff, like, although comics is very much, like, the home of genre entertainment, you don't really associate, like, many, like, of, like, comics about, like, you know, deep space and spaceships and astronauts and stuff like that with the comic genre. You tend to think of that as being, like, hard sci-fi, like, you know, the really dense, unwieldy prose novels that you get, you know, the real hardcore stuff.
Yeah, like the 70s novels and whatnot.
Yeah. So it's interesting seeing like something like in comics that's trying to do the same thing. One thing you can maybe answer for me, Joe, you know, is it Prophet 23 or something like this? Is this just picking up immediately from where the old series left off?
Yeah, that was their like marketing ploy that they wanted to like say that we're picking up right where it left off. But to me, considering it's a completely different book, a completely different look, that was the one thing that I just kind of, you know, it doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't really matter, but I mean, I was kind of like, this should have just been a number one, and so many more people, I think, seeing a number one on a cover would pick it up and jump on it, because, yeah. You know, how many people are going to carry over? The name Prophet alone and a Rob Liefeld alternate cover is going to bring in all those old fans that you wanted anyway.
Yeah, I just think sometimes you see, when you see something like a 23 in the cover or whatever, you think, or 21, you think, nah, there must have been an awful lot of story that I've missed, you know. I feel like I'll be too behind if I try jumping on now. And it sends the wrong message, I think.
I can see that.
Yeah, I've always liked, for any comic series, like, I've never... I always like the idea of, like, kind of like what Lock and Key does, where, like, it kind of does things in a mini-series and moves on. Like, I don't need... You know, like, I would be happy if comics just did that. Like, you know, if this Batman that's going on right now, like the Scott Snyder one with Capullo, if at the end of this that Batman ends and then they call it something and then they move on to another one, like, so the numbering doesn't really have any push or pull to me, but
so this almost was definitely like what they do with the Hellboy stuff, like, you know, because something like this is called Batman the Court of Owls and it's an 11 issue miniseries, right? Then that ends, you start a new one.
I would like that.
Yeah,
actually.
Like that yeah. Works for me, you know, like that's definitely what I'm planning on doing, and that's definitely what I like. Like, you know, like, especially this Marvel thing, like the 13.1 and this, it's like, all right, when you bring decimals into it, it's not
yeah, I never was fond of the pwn idea. But it's funny that we're talking about this because I thought no one else was on the same page as me. When this whole relaunch with DC was being announced was back in April or May or so, it was confirmed. I was saying, like, okay, people are flipping about numbering, and also the publisher is worried about new readers. It's like, just have each story arc be like a mini series, but it's not a mini series, obviously, but it's numbered like one, you know? So it's like, one story is going to be issue Batman number 1 through 4, and then the next story is again issue 1 through 6. But like, you still have a way to notify that this is a, you know, the next story, you know? That way it doesn't scare people. The issue is the hardcore.
No, I was going to say, I think that's why you have, I think, all the creative turnover at the end of the 6th issue for the books that maybe aren't selling so well. I think because they're doing, okay, well, we're going to stop it right there, and the 6th issues is going to go to a trade, and then we're going to kind of go and start with someone else. Like, I mean, the trade system is set up for a 6-issue story anyway, yeah. So just do it like that.
Although, one thing I'm quite annoyed about is that Scott Snyder, for Batman, in terms of talking about that, it's always said right from the beginning this is going to be an 11-part story. And I would much rather they just waited and released it as an 11-part, you know, an 11-chapter graphic novel at the end, because it would have a lot more sellability. But instead of doing the arbitrary cut it off at part 6 and release a trade, you know, the first half, and release another trade the second half when it comes out. And I think, like, you know, that's kind of like a short-term money-grabbing at the expense of, like, you know, maybe a long-term product that could have better shelf life.
They're doing 2 trades instead of one at first?
Yeah, apparently it's already solicited that they're releasing a trade for issues 1 to 6 of Batman March or something.
Really?
There's only one other story that I know for sure that they did that with, and it was weird because the trades came out well after the story came out. Batman Under the Red Hood was released first as 2 separate graphic novels. I was like, what? And they were so thin. I was like, what's the point of this? Obviously, it was for money. And
the way I think to do it is hold out and wait until they eventually, inevitably release a collected edition that contains both of them, and then get that.
Yeah, I guess I'll speak about one of the books that I read this week. I have to say, out of all the books I read, the one that I enjoyed for the dialogue the most was Wonder Woman number 5. But man, I was really down about, you know, the fill-in artists, because I loved Chang so much. So his art, the new artist, fill-in artist, like I think his name was Atkins, last name. He grew on me over time, but I had to reread it more than once to kind of enjoy the art of it. But I did enjoy
it. I didn't actually notice it was a new artist. I think he did a good job of
the third or fourth page. I noticed after like the third or fourth page, I was like, wait, this is not Chang. So, because the coloring was like the same, so.
Yeah, it did make it kind of seamless. I did like this issue a lot more than previous issues.
Did or didn't?
I did. I've been reading Wonder Woman, I've been finding it interesting, but it's something about Brian Azzarello's writing where sometimes, you know, it can be quite intellectual and look how clever this is, but emotionally it's as cold as a mother-in-law's kiss. And I just think, like, this time you actually felt like, you know, there was some heart in it and some emotion, and if you actually started to relate with, like, Wonder Woman a bit more as a human being, or as a Amazon. And yeah, it was going along nicely, but there's some kind of like creepy sexual imagery going on all through it. Like you have like, you know, the weird hentai tentacle porn cover with like the big phallic tentacle wrapping its way up Wonder Woman's thigh, and as Joe pointed out before the podcast started, she's about to plunge her spear into a giant vagina with the looks of it. And it was all about,
It's a sexual looking cover. Like you can definitely, if you want to read into it, there's plenty there to read into.
It's always the classic Golden Age covers used to do with Wonder Woman. Was that like Perfect Guy that was writing her, where they draw these covers of her riding a giant missile? You know,
That was different. That was obvious. I don't agree with the sexual imagery. But did you also read the issue, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just say, the greatest thing I can say is in my entire life, I never gave one shit about Wonder Woman. I never liked her as a character. I never, you know, just did not get behind her at all. Just didn't care. I found that she dragged down, like, the Justice League. Like, just didn't buy her as a character. And the fact that I'm, like, looking forward to every single issue that comes out is, like, the greatest compliment I can give that book.
I think what I like the most is that we found out that Zeus was going to be her father, like, right after issue 1 came out. It was already being leaked. And then 3 was when it actually happened, I believe. And I was like, okay, well, I'm fine with it, but I like the original origin. But they still kept the idea of the original origin and then put a twist on it. And I'm really falling in love with, like, how Azzarello is handling all her new family members, like, just popping up and saying, oh, hey, by the way, we're related. Like, especially this issue with Lennox. I really enjoyed it, like, the writing is what I'm enjoying the most. When Chang draws it, I love it even more. But like, I was still able to enjoy this issue just because I'm really liking how Azrael is shaping her world.
So why you go first, Joe?
No, I was just gonna say I'm sorry that like I interrupted, but I'm just, like I can't like say how much I enjoy this book just because of the character stuff, like the fights and all that stuff. Like that's enjoyable, and Cliff Chang is ridiculously good, so that's always good to look at. But how they take someone who you know is twisting the knife and being the villain and being the antagonist of the story, and yet they still keep her around and they keep these characters around as they're twisting the knives, and how Azzarello, you know, doesn't just make it a clear-cut thing of someone being the villain. Like, I get from when I read it that there's this ominous thing happening. Like, you know, like almost like there's this bigger story, like that's, you know, they're all kind of setting Wonder Woman up for something.
Mm-hmm.
And it just every single month I can't wait. Like Wonder Woman's like one of my like top five books that I'm anticipating to get every single month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was basically the same thing I was gonna say. The idea like the reinterpreted like the gods and things and made them, and a lot of writers seem to become intimidated by those super mythical characters, and they kind of just like, you know, they don't really dig into them as characters and do new things with them. Like it almost reminds me of what Jim S. Krasinski was doing with like his relaunch of Thor a few years ago, like really getting into these characters and dissecting them and rebuilding them and making them interesting and engaging and political and scheming, and it's really an interesting dynamic. Yeah, to go back to the book I was going to mention earlier on, I think there's only one book that must be in everyone's minds this week, and it's Batman 5. Did everyone here read it? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You're gonna want to shoot me.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you not? You didn't read it?
My day today did not go as I planned. My brother has a copy of it, and I was gonna read it, I was like, okay, I have 5 minutes before the real airtime. I can either eat or I can read the book. I have not eaten all day, so I ate.
Read the book. Made a bad decision. Bad decision.
So, apart from Sergio, who's been, like, excluded from this conversation and life for not reading this comic.
Can you read it while we talk about it and just come back in? At some
point? I already
hate. Comic be banished, Sergio. Yeah, I'm just reading, like, birds making silent threats by text to Sergio for not reading this.
I'm used to it. This is like, he's trying to woo me, you know? I'm used to it.
It slipped from out from superhero stories to horror. This was actually scarier than some of like Snyder's more obviously horror stuff, like American Vampire, Swamp Thing. It like had real kind of psychological terror. Did any of you guys watch Twin Peaks?
Oh my god, I just finished watching it, the entire series, like a little while ago.
I did.
Now,
but...
do you know what I'm talking about? How much this reminds you of the Black Lodge scene that ended season 2?
You know what? It completely made me feel like the Black Lodge. I didn't even put that together, honestly, so you just said it right now, but yes.
I have a quick question. I skimmed it, obviously. Were the pages supposed to be flipped, some of them?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I was like, whoa.
It goes on, the pages gradually turn around, so it starts off like, you know, regular, then it turns to landscape view, then it gradually twists upside down, and the panels even break apart and start becoming like increasingly crazy with the layouts. It's like Batman's going mad and you're going mad with him. It's just an incredibly structured comic.
Yeah, I was concerned that I was like, oh shit, my brother got a copy that's like messed up.
No,
I'm just saying, like, the book itself is great, and like Capullo's just I don't know how many. He's just, to me, he's one of my favorites, but I mean, this was just amazing. I don't know if it was his idea or Snyder's idea or what, but it was just awesome.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I've noticed about the DC relaunch is a lot of artists from the 90s, you know, have been kind of brought back into prominent roles. And I think more than any of them, Capullo is the one that seems to be not just like, you know, doing the similar stuff that he was doing back in the 90s, but he's actually tried to write up his game and kind of innovate and do new stuff and evolve as an artist, and you can really see him kind of pushing the boundaries. And I said this in my review, I'm going to be really a cheap whore and post my review as a link that we can put in the show notes later on. But yeah, in my review, I talked about how this is Scott Snyder's anatomy lesson. You know Alan Moore's famous Swamp Thing issue, the anatomy lesson, where they revealed that Alec Holland was dead and Swamp Thing had never been Alec Holland, and that was the comic where everyone went, hang on, this, you know, Alan Moore guy is really the real deal. And I feel like this is going to be the same thing for Scott Snyder. People are going to be talking about this comic, you know, and not only just at the end of the year list when people are talking about the best of the year, but a few years from now people are going to be talking about this as one of Scott Snyder's like standout issues. I think this was also the issue where his Batman run finally managed to shrug off the shadow of the Black Mirror, and I think the Court of Owls is now poised to become an even better story, which is saying something.
Yeah, man, this entire book, I've never really had any doubts as to, like, you know, and even now, you know, Batman's going to pull out in the end. That's just the story of the hero, but I've never seen, like, the visual, and I'm not ruining anything, the visual of the book is like, you know, Batman with the mask on, but one eye is popped out and the other one's still the little slit eye or whatever, whereas the other one is the human eye behind it. And you just see, like, you know, like how it's getting bloodshot and how it's wide and it looks like he's crazy, and it's through the entire thing. I've never seen Batman like that. And how many people can actually pick up a Batman book? You know, most of it's like, okay, he's on a rooftop, he's diving through a pile of bats, he's beating up a guy. I've never seen Batman like he was in this book.
To me, yeah, Batman, he always gets put in death traps and terrible situations, and you almost take that for granted. And it wasn't the situation he's in so much, but how he reacts to it is so unsettling, you know. It's this beloved pop culture icon that you think is the ultimate escape artist, the ultimate keep his calm, keep his cool, and he's ranting and raving, and he's kind of sobbing and screaming and tearing at his skin, and he's going mad, and it's like he's a crazy person. And it's upsetting, because it's almost like somebody, you know, is like, you know, going insane before your eyes, and it's really, it almost feels like Scott Snyder shouldn't be allowed to do it. He's really pushing the boundary, but because he's skirting in the edges of it, it works really well.
It's just a great comic, man. It just shows you what you can do with the medium. It pushes things. Like, who says you have to have pages all in the same direction? Like, that's just really cool. I remember, like, years ago, I think McFarlane and Liefeld actually did something where they turned a book on its side.
And oh, yeah,
like,
I remember
as a kid growing up reading it, and I'm like, that's kind of cool, because I've just never seen it before. And I felt the same way about Batman.
And here's what I've said, like, you know, I know you're a vocal advocate of, like, the creator-owned comics movement, and, you know, too often you find that, you know, there's a lot of laziness in the big two, and you have to go to the indie scene for new ideas. But what I hope happens is that this, you know, revival of the creator-owned scene and, you know, new voices coming out pushes the big two books to be better and, like, you know, and live up to that potential. If Batman is the biggest name in comics, then I think the comics should live up to that in quality. And rather than just coasting on name value, it should be trying to be, like, you know, the best book out there. I think it's admirable that Scott Snyder's trying to do that.
And I really do agree with you, the fact that it'd be good if this causes the big two to push, because there's so many books that's like you want them to be better, but it's like they're just not happening. And yeah. it happens, it's going to happen, but, like, I don't know, I have a really good feeling about 2012. It seems like DC's relaunch has pushed everyone else to up their game too. It's good news for the comic world.
You don't have to. So, I can go on a rant about how great comics are. I could literally go. I mean, like, everything that's coming, I could literally scream like a crazy person outside the subway and just, like, throw comic books at people, like homeless throw feces, and just be like, please fucking read comic books. Please stop going home and watching the 18th iteration of Charlie's Angels and just go read a fucking comic. Here's all these good books out there. And, you know, and I've said this a million times, people just don't know what comics are. You know, like, people wouldn't even be able to wrap their head around that kind of Batman story.
Yeah.
You know, and they wouldn't ever think that's behind a comic.
Hand to somebody and say, like, you know, Batman, you know, comics aren't just for kids, you know. It's easy to show them what the medium can do, you know. It can challenge you, it can, you know, scare you, it can make you think, you know, it can still be a great story.
Well, the thing is, at the end of the day, though, sad as it is, the way that some people are, and kind of majority of the people are, they wouldn't know the difference.
Right, so did anybody read anything else this week? The one other book I read was Chew 23, which was absolutely hilarious. Rob Gilroy is a god among men. He's just an absolutely hilarious artist. The first page in this is a giant lion trying to take a dump in a litter box, which says it all. I mean, it actually made me laugh out loud about three or four different times a single issue. I can always count on Chew to cheer me up.
I really want to get into that book. I think I mentioned a previous episode that I plan to. It's just my list is so long. A book that I read this week that I realized how much I just love the art. Like, when you were talking about that one awards, the Eagle Awards,
yeah,
and I was doing my ballots and everything, and I threw you a vote. But yeah, when I got to the artist area, I obviously put down Ivan Reyes because I've just been loving his artwork. But when I read Nightwing number 5 this week, I just realized, like, I was blown away by the art from issue 1 to begin with, Eddie Barrows, but, like, I don't know why this issue, it is really sunk in. It's like, wow, this guy is kind of like, he has a similar style to Ivan Reyes, and, like, as the colorist that does it too, and the inker, is like, I really love Nightwing, which is great because Nightwing has had titles before this relaunch, but I never felt that I could get into it. Partially was because it was so many issues in. I was intimidated, I admit, but also because it was a mental block type of thing like I always have, which I wish I can get rid of with some books, but I'm just really glad that there's a Nightwing book that I'm finally reading, and this book, this issue, at first I thought that it was a fill-in issue because of what happens majority of the issue, but the way I see it, it's not really a fill-in. It still carries the story, and if anything, it was still enjoyable. So I was really fond of Nightwing this week, and the art, again, just continues to blow me away.
See, I read Nightwing issue 1, and then I dropped it, and I keep on kind of regretting dropping it, because people say, oh yeah, it's really good, but I just can't feel compelled to pick it back up again.
It's working a really good angle. Like, the story's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's bringing him back to the whole, you know, like, the whole circus thing of how his family went. Like, I don't, you know, I mean, I wasn't, like, always a huge Nightwing fan, but this book I'm really digging.
Yeah, so maybe pick up.
Well, when I read the previews for it before the relaunch happened, it's like, oh, they're doing a story with Haley Circus. That is so expected. It's like pulling a cliche. It's like, of course, that story would eventually come up. So I was a little unsure about it, but I've been enjoying it. And there's a twist at the end of this issue that's also good.
Cool.
It's not the most, you know, surprising, but it's surprising for the story. You know, it's a comic, so you expect certain cliches.
Yeah.
Do you know what my favorite part of the book is? Well, this issue, I should say, is when he's kind of with the circus and they're traveling. Like, I guess the circus travels in by train. And the way he still goes out as the train goes across the country and they're in different spots, yet he's still Nightwing, and how he gets in and out of places, like how he literally drives his motorcycle up and he just does it like no problem. He just drives his motorcycle right in and makes that jump. You know, normally people try to go through a cart in a train, and he just has to, he has one. It's like his special weapons cart, and it's just I like everything about that book. It's just a fun, awesome book, and the reveal at the end I did not see coming.
Yeah, I didn't see either. And also the fact that who doesn't love a rhyming demon? I mean, come on, it made me think of Etrigan. It was just awesome. So it was a
that's
fun
what
book.
I thought it was when I saw the cover. I was like, oh wow, he's in here. Okay,
I knew it wasn't. The best Raven
bit I ever saw was in Sandman. Or was it Sandman? No, so I think it was actually Swamp Thing, one of Alan Moore's things, where Etrigan is in hell. I think he's leading Swamp Thing through hell, and he starts this verbal jousting with these other rhyming demons who are like low rhyming demons and aren't quite as good as Etrigan, and they keep on struggling to try and come up with rhymes, and they come up with really dodgy rhymes, and it's like
well, yeah, it's not Etrigan in this one, but it's just fun. I mean, it was unexpected. I thought, oh, it looks like some monster on the cover. Okay, that's pretty cool. And then he starts talking. I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. It's like Etrigan. So that was fun.
Right, so in terms of comic news this week, there's one big thing I want to talk about. Before that, we want to mention the DC's new logo.
Looks like it's a logo for an engineering firm or something. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get it at first, so this is kind of dull. I can kind of get what they're going for when you see it, you know, in a digital medium, you know, and the fact that they have it peeling back and every cover has, like, you know, a little bit of something behind it. So you can see the idea of peeling touch screens, like touching it and it peels back, you know, but I don't know. I really love the swoosh. I really like that. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to get forget that.
I had great difficulty, too. But then I saw a sample, which we'll put in the show notes, that IGN showed first, I believe. And it's kind of like, they show three titles, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And they show with the new logo, how it would look. And I was like, oh, the way that they line up the DC and the DC Comics part of it, I was like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. And the colors, and when DC themselves put their official logo on their Facebook, like the default one, it was blue and black, and it's also a blue and white one. I was like, oh, that was kind of cool, actually. So it's grown on me, but yeah, I still love the swoosh, so I'm going to miss it.
I imagine it'll grow on me over time.
Have you seen the new logo, Joe?
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually had no problem with it once I saw it, like you said, like on IGN, when I saw it, like, I think I saw a Green Lantern, a Batman, which like kind of had like a little bit of like smoke and like a gray tone to it, and then I saw a Green Lantern, and I thought it was fine. Like, you know, I mean, it doesn't really fit with the comics that I've seen put it on the cover, but I'm sure I'll get used to it. Like, it's not – I know people were up in arms about it. I'm not really that passionate about the company logo. Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not getting a tattoo of it anytime soon.
Well, they talked about how they wanted a logo that they could use more, I guess, across the entire what's the term?
Platform and stuff like they could,
yeah, like say, it's being used for everything pretty much.
Yeah, so I could see the pull of it as a graphic artist is what I do. I could see the reason for it. It looks much more professional. Like it looks like I would hire that firm or I would hire that company for something. It's like a Fortune 500 type thing or whatever you want to say, like a company logo. But I don't know exactly how it's going to look on the books yet. You know, like unless – because I feel like now if you're changing that, but then you put all the other lettering of, like, you know, like the comic font lettering that goes for the titles of books, like, I don't think it's going to mesh well because they aren't like that.
That was a bit awkward, yeah.
I think we were talking about different IGN posts, because IGN had two posts. One that was like a palette of seven different logos, which I think you were talking about. The one that I was talking about was a later article where it showed like actual cover samples with the logos on them. And that's for me when that was the moment for me where I was like, oh, this actually could look nice. So like I said, I'll put in the show notes, but I think we're talking about two different articles is what's going on.
Yeah, it could definitely be. But you know what? Like, even with most stuff in comics, like, when people are like, it's the worst thing, whatever, I'm just always like, you know, there's always tomorrow. I just kind of hope something looks cooler. Like, you know, like, these companies have been around for a while. I'm pretty sure they kind of know what they're doing, hopefully.
Yeah. So, you know, like,
yeah. Well, they got lambasted for the whole, the relaunch and, you're ruining continuity and blah, blah, blah.
It worked out late enough for them.
Yeah, I've never bought as many DC books in my life.
Yeah, so guess it worked in that end. Right, so the big story I want to talk about this week is a massive success story, where we've had an indie book not distributed through Diamond has sold out at distributor level. It is Scam from Comics Tribe, written and drawn by Joe Mulvey, who we have here. So congratulations, Joe, on your big success.
You're just going to come around with me everywhere I go.
Yeah, I'm just going to introduce you to that way.
That was amazing. Like, every time I go into, like, Pep Boys or Starbucks or, you know, everywhere, that's it.
Just call him on speed dial, put on a speakerphone, and there, boom.
Right. Love it. What I want to post for the show notes is a Bleeding Cool article that was posted up that gives, like, you know, links to every shop that you can buy this in. I know it was 777 copies you sold in total.
Yeah, we're doing well now. We're deep into the second print run, which is nice.
And so how many shops did it end up being in total across America? Do you know offhand?
Offhand, I know it's, you know, we set up, like, the whole marketing was behind, like, you know, making it, like, because it's con men, superpowered con men set in Vegas, so we tried to make it the Magic 21 to tie in the blackjack thing, and we got to 21, and then we went over 21, so, you know, it started getting a little bit crazier. Plus, then we have, like, retailers who have, like, more than one store that were reaching out to us, but we were just counting it as one, even though one retailer might have, like, say, like, four stores in Chicago or whatever it is. So it got up there, you know, pretty high. But, I mean, like, that's all thanks to Tyler James from Comics Tribe and, you know, his reach that he did with the Red 10, which was his first, you know, book. And it was the last book that he did that he got into a lot of stores, and it's
interesting. The Red 10 was kind of like his pilot scheme, and then he seems to have built on that in terms of scope and scale with Scam.
Yeah, man, it's the marketing for it was great. Like, you know, it's honestly like living a dream. Like, that's the best thing you could say. Like, I just love drawing the book. I love writing the book. And then all of a sudden, when you decide to show it to people are like, wow, that doesn't suck. And you're like, yes, that's the best thing I can ask for.
Yeah, well, you touched on it a little bit there when you were talking, but could you tell us all, for people who don't know what Scam's about, give it the pitch?
Sure, absolutely. It's pretty much the way I started off was like, I'm a big fan of con men books. Like, when I was a kid, I used to watch The Sting and all that kind of stuff, and I kind of, like, merged it with superheroes, because I remember, like, as a kid, the best way I could tell you is what happened to kind of, like, formulate the idea. When I was a child, and by a child, I mean teenager, like, one day my father came to me, and he's like, you know, he's like, how old are you now, 17, 18? I'm like, yeah. He's like, do you have a fake ID? And I'm like, no. Meanwhile, I did. And he's like, you have a good one? And I was like, a good one? So he's like, let me see your ID. So he's like, that's not a good one. Go to the city and get a good one. And I live in New York City, so it's feasible. I'm not going to say I know where you can get them. I'm just going to say it happens. And, you
just
know, so I got it
afterwards, and we can give you a link to some 5N.
Yeah, absolutely. And it ended up, I got a nice fake ID. And my father's like, all right, you're 18. Let's go to Vegas. And we went to Vegas. And we kind of, like, you know, used to gamble and all that stuff. And I was always a big comic fan, you know, and I always liked to draw. And another great thing was my father was a huge, like, supporter of it. Like, you know, and especially I think when I was a kid was, like, during the boom. So he saw, like, you know, all those books going for all that money. And, like, you know, whereas, like, back in – like, I've heard, like, Rob Liefeld and other people tell stories of, like, how their parents, like, were like, no, you know, don't ever draw, that stuff will rot your brain. My father was like, fuck that, my kid's going to be a millionaire, he's going to be drawing stuff, he's going to, you know. Yeah, my father was like, draw on a napkin, sign it, you know, when I was like 12. But so it ended up just like walking around a casino one day, and my father was like, wow, can you imagine if Magneto was here, like what he would do on a roulette table? He would crush that thing. Or like, you know, Professor X playing blackjack, or like, you know, any of this stuff. Superman, you know, playing poker, and you could look through hand. And all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, why aren't like superheroes like just in Vegas? Why would you put on tights when you could put on a nice suit and go make some money and, you know, hang out with strippers? So that's pretty much the pitch for the book is Ocean's 11 meets X-Men, where there's these guys with powers, and they decide to go to Vegas and kind of, you know, grift with their abilities instead of save the world.
Well, I read it at New York. It was an early copy at the time. I think you've since refined it, but the copy I read really blew me away. Was it 42 pages of content?
Yes.
And so you felt like a really whole bunch of plot for your book. It had twists and backstabbings and double crosses, and it had like enough plot, as much plot as you usually find, like in a 6-issue decompressed arc, you know, in another comic series, all crammed into a single issue. So it's almost like, where the hell do you go for issue 2 in a good way? And I really think it's going to impress a lot of people. And I think it's quite good that it's kind of sneaked in before Super Crooks, which is probably going to be Mark Miller doing the same idea with much more hype, but a lot less well. So I'm glad to see that you're getting some buzz off of it, and I think it's well-deserved success. I was going to ask you, we know it's going to in a lot of shops across America. If there's anywhere, any shops that don't have the book and they're hearing all this hype and they want to find out how they can get Scam in their comic store, how do they go about it? Who do they contact?
I would say get in touch with like comicstribe.com, get in touch with me. I have whatsthescam.net. That's the website. We also have comicstribe.com. You can get in touch with, you know.
Just type in these addresses in for the show notes.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's pretty much like a door-to-door salesman type thing. Like, that's how we're doing it. You know, this isn't going through Diamond. It's pretty much all on the people from Comics Tribe and myself back to kind of push it to as many people as possible. And, you know, we've been really, really fortunate. A lot of people picked up on the book. And hopefully that'll build momentum, and then people will get into it, and then we'll be able to stock in more stores. Like that's the hope. Now let me ask Serge a question. Did you hear about this beforehand, or did John kind of ambush you with this?
John, he gave me a link to the article before the show started. I was aware of Mark Miller's Super Crooks, so when I read the article, I was like, oh, interesting. And then I read the preview. I enjoyed it. I was like, damn it, why couldn't it be longer for the preview? So I gotta say I'm very impressed. I'm looking forward to when I get my hands on it, and also the fact that I'm just really happy for you guys and for Comics Tribe. Like obviously I found out through Comics Tribe because of John. John's been doing his work with them with the Standard, and also this is great news for the industry and also in general for a new comic book publishing company to, you know, get some attention, get some good books out there. And I'm happy for you guys. I hope everything works out well.
Yeah, dude, so do I. I appreciate it. And John's book, The Standard, is awesome. I know that's coming up on the dock. It is on the docket to be launched. And, like, that's just really the great thing is, like, you know, the brand of Comics Tribe kind of launches on and goes bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, Red 10, which is a great book, and if anyone out there is listening and hasn't read the Red 10, please go check it out. You can buy it online digitally. I know it just came out with a whole bunch of extra stuff digitally through Drive-Thru Comics and Graphically. Go pick it up. It's pretty much like a Agatha Christie and Then There Were None supertelling, only with superheroes. Like Tyler James always says, if he had the Justice League, this is a type of story, like an Elseworlds story, he would tell. And, you know, Tyler did such a great job promoting it and getting it into stores and really having this hands-on indie approach. And then Scam was next on the launching block, and that's gotten a really good response. I mean, like, Maximum Comics in Las Vegas, they were, like, our high roller package, and they got, like, a lot of copies. And, like, I talked to them last night over Twitter, and they were, like, just from our, you know, our preview and talking about the Bleeding Cool article that, you know, compared it to Mark Millar. I'm not going to lie. Having your name and book compared to Mark Millar in any, you know, sort of press is just a great – a great thing. I said, if we can get an article to compare it to the Bible, maybe we could sell more issues.
I'll write that out for the blog.
Yeah, but you know, people just gravitated towards it, and they're already like almost close to the pre-sales already are almost sold out, and they have like almost over 100 books in Maximum, and that's awesome. Like that's right. Just.
I'll tell you what I think is absolutely great about what you've done with Scam and what Terror did with Red 10. In the traditional publishing model of comics as it currently stands, there's this disconnect between comics retailers and comic creators. As a creator, you're writing a book, you're pitching to the publisher, yeah, sure, and then you're thinking, how do I get into Diamond? You're trying to pitch to Diamond and hoping Diamond will then appeal to retailers. And this almost seems to be cutting out the middleman and saying, well, why can't we approach retailers personally, treat every comic shop as individuals and say, you know, do you want to be part of this? Do you want to have our book? And you know, and it makes them feel like, you know, they're more involved in the creative process. It moralizes them a bit. And makes them feel a part of something special. I think it's a really interesting, exciting new way to be approaching comics. It's almost grassroots.
Yeah, and I think that, like, Serge, where are you from, if you don't mind me asking? Like,
I'm actually from New York.
Are you in New York, really?
No, I don't live there currently, but I'm from New York.
Well, where are you living right now?
Texas.
Okay, and that was on purpose. That was a choice?
He's serving a prison sentence right now.
Yeah. No, I'm just asking, are you running from certain people that may or may not have made fake IDs a few years ago? You just, you know, let me know.
I actually have a question, though, because the article also talks about the way that Comics Tribe has been pushing the books, and they made a comparison to a book called Our Love is Real, and I saw that book at my comic shop, actually, Our Love is Real, the cover with a guy and a dog, and mm-hmm. I laughed at the cover, but I'm actually like, I read the article, but what was the method that was being used for, I guess, advertising, pushing the book out?
Well, for advertising, I mean, it's pretty much been like, you know, we do press releases and we do, like I made a site, but I mean, like the marketing behind getting into stores was pretty much just very much similar to Our Love is Real, where it's like, you know what, we're going to go past Diamond because we're not going to, you know, like John just said, like it was a feat because we're not named creators yet. We're doing independent books. We're doing it. Like a lot of people in comics do it literally for just the love of doing it. And if you have to go and hit these certain benchmarks that Diamond sets for you, forget about even profit. You're just not going to, you're not going to do it. And you're going to be put in a catalog that, you know, your space is so minute, no one's going to even see you in there. Yeah. So if you want the retailer to look at your book anyway, the best thing you can do is like I literally called over 30 stores. And I was like, hey, how you doing? My name's Joe Mulvey. I have this book. Can I send you the PDF? Can I send you everything to take a look at? And can we go from there? And that was really good. And also, you know, the retailer set up that Tyler James already had where people had seen his book, you know, had been able to move his book because it was a good idea and it was a great book. So all of a sudden, you know, people go, okay, well, I know your name kind of gets synonymous with quality, and then people are more eager to look at you. And especially if you could show someone you can make the money, you know, that's the bottom line in a commercial market. They just want to see that, you know, you could sell something.
On that point, I just wanted to see a really, really good post I read on Twitter. It seems to be like a stranger that just read the book, you know, Your Scam. I think it was you the one that retweeted it, and they said, after reading Scam, I can say Comics Tribe has become a watermark of quality. And that's what you're looking for. Do people like to see, you know, the name Comics Tribe or your name and go, well, I can trust that that'll be good, so I'll pick it up. It's like brand recognition.
I actually have a question for both of you guys, since on this episode we have two people that were with the Comics Tribe. I guess sort of like how did the both of you guys get involved with Comics Tribe? Like, I'm very happy to see that this publisher is starting to get noticed more, and I'm just you know, curious how it started for you two. Whoever wants to go first is good to go.
Well, I can go first. Basically, I knew Stephen Forbes is the editor of The Standard. So I was kind of aware right from the get-go that Comics Tribe was going to be coming into existence now in 2011. So once Stephen Forbes had been editing the standard, he kind of got me in touch with Tyler and told, you know, I talked to Tyler and Tyler said he was planning down the line for Comics Tribe to start a publishing wing and that I want the standard to be a part of the opening lineup. And I said, yes, please. And then from there, Comics Tribe took off and I started contributing regularly and Tyler invited me to write a column for it as well, like reviewing comics. And just gradually by degrees, because I really believe in it, because I'm really enthusiastic about it, I've just got more involved. And what I said in New York a couple of times was, what felt great was that I wasn't standing up selling books and lying. I could honestly be enthusiastic about every single one of these books because Tyler's put together a bunch of passionate, talented creators where every single book is quality. Every single book is like, when you have a site that's all about the craft of making comics, that craft has to be reflected in the books themselves. And it is. All the books are of a really high quality. They all look professional, I think. They all look really stylish. They all look great. They are great. And yeah, so I'm happy to part. I think I blabbered a bit more than I should have there, so I don't take over.
No, the way I got hooked up with them was I started doing a thing on my own website, JoeMulvieyArt.com, that I just kind of started like interviewing people about comic books. Like I just kind of – I don't know if you guys did. I'll put it – I guess we'll put it in the show notes, JoeMulvieyArt.com. Now I've actually started partnering and the articles are up on ComicsBulletin.com, and it was just pretty much – you know, I would go into like – I'm a freelance graphic artist in New York City. So, you know, as you go and bounce from job to job to job, you're in some place for 2 weeks. You're in another place for maybe, you know, 3 months, whatever the contract or whatever the job requires. And I would just like kind of read comics. And then people would like look at me and all this stuff and then like, oh, you know. And pretty much every bit of, you know, regular – what's the word that I'm looking for? By the way, I am a writer and I can't think of a word. every bit of like, you know, pretty much, I want to, this has got to be edited because this is just absolutely painful.
No, really?
Every bit of
like so rough.
No, leave it all in. Every bit of a bias that you have from people, like, you know, looking at you, like, you know, you're a grown man, you know, and take grown with a grain of salt. I'm like 5'8" and 200 pounds, but you're a grown man reading a comic book. And then I would be like, do you guys really know what comics are? And then I would show them, like, you know, whatever I was reading. And, you know, maybe I was reading, like, Why the Last Man, Scalped, whatever. I mean, this happened probably about, like, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And all of a sudden, like, I'd show people something. They'd look at it, and they'd be like, wow, I never knew these were comics. So then I started this thing where I would do an interview. Like, I'd ask people what, first, you know, what do they think comics are? Then I'd kind of gauge their entertainment interests. Then I'd give them some books that fit their entertainment interests, let them, like, have some time to read them, and then I'd interview them afterwards. And all of a sudden, I think, like, Greg Pak, who writes for Marvel, and Ron Mars and all these people were really very nice, and they kind of, like, caught on to it, and they were like, wow, this guy's really a good advocate for comics. And, you know, Tyler reached out to me, and he was like, oh, I really like kind of the stuff you're doing. And then he – I think he looked at my site, like, the other art, and he saw I was making my own creator-owned book, and then we went from there.
Yeah. I was definitely going to ask you about your interviews because you so you think you know comics, is that what they're called?
What do you really know about comics?
Yeah, what do you know about comics? Because that was when I first heard of you as well, and I thought they were fascinating reading, and I really get into them. And I think it's particularly interesting when you meet up with someone that's really resistant and always determined not to like comics and attention.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to listen to you, but there's this Scottish drunk just screaming all about.
Sorry.
This is on the same site, JoeMulvieyArt.com, the interviews.
Joe, JoeMulvieyArt.
Sorry, Joe.
No problem. JoeMulvieyArt.com has like a lot of the whole back roll. Like there's probably a bunch of them that I did, and then the more recent ones are on ComicsBulletin.com.
I'll try and find the specific link in Comics Bulletin that will take you to it, and I'll post it in the show notes later on.
Thank you.
But yeah, I think it's really interesting. Like, and as I say, I think it's great just seeing like. Because this is an interesting culture, this real distaste for comics we seem to have in our culture. Because you can go over to Japan even and you'll see rich executive businessmen reading, you know, manga on the subway. But it's just here for some reason. We look down on it. You know, we can watch, like, insulting crap on TV. But a comic is childish and stupid, you know?
I mean, you don't have to tell me. Like, I mean, you know, if you really, like, look at any comic... The amount of writing skill it takes to do it well, the amount of artistic skill it takes to do it well, and just the entire production value of it. Comics have never been better than they are right now. And for people to kind of not get that. And people always say, oh, comics are always going to be this thing, like, you know, capes and superheroes and stuff like that. That doesn't mean they can't be good. Like, I always point out, like, to me, my favorite Superman story was the Grant Morrison, what was it, Superman All Seasons?
Or, All-Star Superman.
No, what's, All-Star Superman, I'm sorry. That was my favorite story, and, like, I've given that to people who've never read comics before, and they are like, wow, I didn't know that could be Superman.
Yeah,
totally. Like, there's a moniker, and people still say, like, oh, you know, that's Japan or whatever. All you need is the right tweak in marketing and for someone to see it in a different way, and that could flood through culture. I mean, the biggest thing I bring up in the articles is 99% of people have fucking Angry Birds on their phone.
Yeah. I mean,
from 70 to 7, you're going to tell me that all of a sudden you can just throw a fucking bird in a slingshot at something, but that's not childish. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
But,
you know,
like,
that's
even,
okay.
Yeah, but even, like, just because it's a guy in a costume, that's childish, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't work, man. It's just a great medium. And the thing is, if you're in comics and you're into comics and you see the other mediums like TV and movies, everything is so safe and so marketed to, you know, make – you know, regurgitated stuff. I mean, dude, there's an issue when good Batman and good Spider-Man movies, regardless of three, come out, and all of a sudden there's already a reboot.
Yeah.
Like, they just have no ideas in these other mediums, and comics just constantly innovate and make cool things, and, you know, like,
and,
once
and comics
people
don't
really
get credit,
seen,
it's a shame they don't get credit. I mean,
they
like,
don't.
The Dark Knight, when that came out, and The Dark Knight was pretty much the closest of the Dark Knight and Batman Begins, but Dark Knight especially, was the closest representation to the tone and complexity of the comics. But you know, the mainstream news media was, oh, simple comics, you know, and Hollywood comes in and, you know, makes it deep.
Yeah, that's really annoying.
You know, it's a shame, like, you know, the comics don't get it. And it's like you're saying, it was a Mark Waid that said, there's more ideas on the bookshelf in any given week, in the comic store than there is an entire year in Hollywood.
It's kind of like how,
yeah, absolutely,
there's those few shows that have come out on different stations. One's called Grimm, the other one's called Once Upon a Time. I'm not saying, and also Bill Willingham has been interviewed, and he doesn't believe that they're copying him, but the writer of Fables from Vertigo Comics, his stuff has been out for years, and it's been I know John couldn't get into it after the first trade somewhat, but, like, it's been an amazing book. It's won so many Eisner Awards. And here are some TV shows that have similar ideas, and it's like people find that to be fine, but not to read a comic that has the same idea, but, in my opinion, better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always found it amazing that you go and you watch, like, anything on, you know, I mean, I'm saying, like, people say comic bookie, and, like, they mean, like, you know, like, you know, Superman or, like, sci-fi, but, I mean, you could put Criminal on HBO or Showtime right now, and people wouldn't acquit, or even Scalped. Put Scalped on HBO. I've been screaming that for years. Like,
please.
That's, you know, a Native American Wire.
Please do it.
Yeah.
That would
and,
do really
and,
well, actually.
All of a sudden, there would be, yeah, and there'd be no issue with, you know, oh, it's kiddie, it's this, it's that. For some reason, the marketing behind comics has never really pushed it beyond where it was back in, like, the 1940s and 50s, where it was, like, you know, this thing that kids put in their bike and ran home and read. And I think, like, I actually had a conversation. Mark Waid was on a website at one point, and he was talking about it, and he goes, oh, I always hear people talk about marketing in comics. Why are you going to market to the same 200,000 people every single time? Like, there's no point. And it's like, there's no way you have such a great product that you do in comic books and you don't think you can grab a bigger audience. Like,
yeah,
you,
like,
definitely can.
So,
you know, I mean, I don't know. That's just me. I'm a psycho.
So, you know?
What was it, John?
The Walking Dead, that showed that comics can be taken seriously, you know, and but you almost, they don't even see it marketed as a comic book adaptation because it doesn't fit the box, you know? Like, there's so much more potential, you know, to the medium than what's been explored, and it's a shame, you know, but hopefully that will change. We never know. We live in hope.
That is. You know what? My plan is Scam comes out, hopefully does well, hopefully people like it, and I'm not I understand that most people, you know, not everyone likes everything, and that's fine. I'm sure I'm going to have tons of people that tell me I suck, and that's fine. But as soon as that book comes out, like, I feel like that's an idea of a book that you can give to people that's like, oh, I've never read a comic. Okay, well, if you had a superpower, what would you do? And unfortunately, well, most people would say, I'm not going to put on tights and fight for the good of the world. They're going to say, I'm going to use it for self-gain. Well, John, you wear tights constantly. It's
yeah,
not really a fair.
So.
I'm wearing tights right now, and it is amazing.
Doing a little jig.
I thought I was the only one. This is the tights podcast from now.
That is wonderful.
But yeah, like, I hope, like, that's also another point of doing the book. I want to get readers who kind of don't get it. I have tons of friends that are New York City firemen that have now started going into comic shops and just being like, hey, I want to, you know, do you have this? Do you have that? Do you have Sweets by Cody Chamberlain was a huge book that, you know, grabbed new readers. Echoes by Joshua Fialkov. There's just so many good books out. It's painful that people don't really see them.
Yeah, it's a shame. Like, people are scratching the surface, you know. And there's a whole treasure trove of ideas. And I think, like, you know, I think it just needs a new marketing spin. I just think it needs something to click and make people realise, you know, that it is as diverse and rich a medium as film or TV or prose, if not more so. I just hope it happens in our lifetime.
I'm devout in making sure that it happens in our lifetime. And it sounds like a psychopath thing to say, but I really do believe that we're just really close to it.
Yeah.
We're just really, really close to. I mean, a lot of people have been jumping on this. You know, 2012 is the year of the indie creator.
I'm glad of that as well.
Yeah, and it's awesome.
One thing. Speaking of indie creator, we were talking about in general. Comics try to lend this up anyway. Today, John had some actual news that I don't think he thought to bring up. I want to, I guess, shine some light on him. I don't know why. I mean, he just, you know, I guess he's a cool guy. But John, don't you guys have a new colorist from Standard?
Oh yeah, I can't believe I missed an opportunity to pimp the Standard. You know what? I must
exactly. You missed it the last time, so I made a effort to make sure that I remember to mention that. So.
Yeah, the very talented Mike Gagnon, who was a flatter on issue 2, has been promoted to full-blown colorist in, for the Standard 3 and hopefully for issues 4, 5 and 6 as well. If you go on standardcomic.com, you'll see an update of, I've posted a preview page of his colors to give people a taste of what he's going to be bringing to the table. I'm really excited. He's a talented guy. He's enthusiastic. He's prompt, you know, really crisp green colors. Nice compliment, Jonathan Rector. And they're both in Canada, so they could maybe do some team ups and go promote the book, hopefully in the not too distant future. So yeah, exciting stuff. And yeah, go read the Standard.
Well, let me just say, go read the Standard and go pour over it, because between John's writing and John's – do you guys have a nickname for him? Do you call him the Rector? Because a John and a John doesn't sound right. But
I call him Jonathan at first.
Jonathan. Part. Okay. And between Jonathan's art, I mean, that book is amazing. I can't – like John was saying, like when you were selling in New York Comic Con, all the books are great. You really picked them up and, you know, so many people came by our table and were like, wow, these just look – they don't look like indie books. And, you know, I don't even know what an indie book's supposed to look like. I guess black and white and stick figures or I don't know.
Yeah.
But I can't say enough. I can't give enough praise to the Standard as just being a really, really, really good book.
Well, thank you very much. I'm in good company. While we're doing all this, like, love fest and plugging of our comics, you should check out Comics Tribe Shop. I'm going to post a link to where you can pre-order Scam online if you not able to get it in your local comic shop. It's here. And I'm also going to post a link to the general Comics Tribe shop where you can find all of our products.
Wait. I'm sorry. I can hold it in. It sounds like it's a genital.
Where?
I just had to get it out there, man.
I read this in genitals.
It's not like those genital comic shops. So I'm sorry. It's bad, but I couldn't hold it in.
You have a dirty mind, Serge. You hear genitals in it.
Proceed.
Okay. Genitals.
I was just going to say I have no problem with that. Either one. Whichever one it is, that's fine. And okay. I am sending a link as well so you guys can check this out.
So, yeah, just buy all of our stuff. It's great. We're posting that in the show notes as well. Get shop online at Comics Tribe. Is this a YouTube video of genitals?
I'm just going to say look at it because I think it really does... it's something you might want to say.
I'm scared.
Just go ahead and click on the button. We can edit this out at the end.
Can we click on it during the show?
Oh, I would hope you would. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Just
okay. Monkey rapes a frog. You know what it's called?
All right. First of all, the frog was asking for it, but just go ahead and look at it. It's
what rapists always say.
Wow, that is true. You actually that frog. Title. No, the title really does deliver. Just like Scam delivers, that thing delivers.
My God, I've just got to the monkey bit.
I'm hearing it. Someone else, that's awesome.
Yeah, you can hear it because...
What's it doing? Oh my God!
Yeah, that's a monkey raping a frog, John Boy. That's what's going on. I'd like to think it's consensual, but you don't know.
That poor frog?
It's not good.
I hope that frog had a good...
Alan Ward the video.
I hope that frog had a good gag flex, that's all I'll say.
Dude, this
I said, you know what? This interview needs a little more Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think on that high note, we have to bring this to conclusion.
Someone in comics, and I won't rat him out, when they found out about the sellout of Scam, sent me an email that said, congratulations, this is for you, and that was in it. And I was like, thanks. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Also, one last question. Do you have any plans beyond Scam? Any new books in the horizon? You want
to... Yeah, Scam's going to probably take me up to the New York Comic Con, because right now issue 2 is done. It's getting its final coloring tweaks and lettering, and issue 3 is like halfway done, so we're a 5-issue limited series, and then that's going to bring me up to New York Comic Con, hopefully be able to have the trade, and then after that I do have something in the works, but that's it. And I'm pretty devout in saying that I'm going to stay creator-owned for quite a while.
Awesome. I tell you, I'm so excited about New York Comic Con 2012. We've got Scam in trade, hopefully the Standard in trade. It's going to be a big climactic celebration come October 2012 in a non-sexual way.
Can we get, well, you know what, we'll just have a monkey and a frog and a bottle of champagne. But can we get Serge to come up for like a live podcast at a table or something? Or
Serge, if you can come to New York Comic Con, that would be awesome.
I actually was planning on it this year because I went to New York for New Year's, this past New Year's, obviously, and I used to live there, but I moved years ago, and this is one of my, I guess, true visits. Like, I went by myself, not with my family or my brother, so it was just me, and I was like, man, I need to come here more often again because I had such a blast, and I've been to San Diego for Comic-Con, and it was great, obviously, but I really, really want to go to New York Comic-Con, so I actually was planning on it. So hopefully
let's make it happen, guys.
All right, let's do it. Yeah, absolutely. We can review a lot, you know, do a live podcast or whatever. Or,
yeah, there's a podcast arena on the show floor.
Yeah, well, I actually spoke with a few companies from last year about doing more in the small press area, like making it more of a spectacle, like, you know, maybe getting a TV set up, like cut like 60 inches so people could draw it like at a table and like on a stage and then have it put up.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we talked to a few companies about it, and they all seemed like, you know, chipping in was a good idea, so we'll see, knock wood, if that hopefully comes to fruition.
Oh, man, October can't come fast enough. Well,
yes, it can. We've got, like, 9 months. We're good.
I just wish to hear me. All I'm going to say is, well, thank you very much for coming and talking to us. That was really interesting insight into the world of comics. And I mean, it wasn't just me talking to everybody for an hour, so that was even better.
No, I appreciate that. Look, I love talking comics, entertainment, monkey frog relations. anything you guys want to talk about, I am in.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Joe. And anytime you want to come back, you're always going to be welcome. So to wrap things up, you've been listening to Joe Mulvey. Do you want to say goodbye, Joe?
Goodbye, everybody. And on January 25th, you should hound your local comic shop for Scam number 1 from Comic Tribe Press.
Oh my God, I suck at a host. I forgot to say you can get the book next week. Yeah, it's out in shops on Wednesday, January 25th.
But if someone listens to this podcast in October, getting ready for the New York Comic Con, it's just going to be in the past. So it's okay. You don't have to say next week. Just drop that January 25th.
Yeah.
And I would say, if it stays in print, every January 25th, you can go from now till the end of time.
And you've been listening to Sergio Martinez.
I just want to add in that this is the one episode where John did not mention Scalp, but Scalp was still mentioned, and that was by Joe, which is still cool, but I'm glad that John didn't do it.
Attack me the entire time. Talk more about Scalp. Talk more about Scalp.
Next week's the Scalp special, so look
forward to that. You know, John does text in an accent, so it's very hard to read.
My wonderful accent. You've not been listening to Bird, who's still quietly jerking off in the corner. I think he's about finished. And I've been John Lees. Good night and good luck. Harder to Kill than Rob Liefeld's writing career. It's the off-panel podcast, the comic show where the ink is fresh and I fucked that up.
Wow,
you had
that.
It's attention to hang ink is fresh. Right, okay. Take two.
I like the Rob Liefeld line though. It was good.
Yeah, I'm going to try and say that spontaneously again. Harder to Kill than Rob Liefeld's writing career. It's the off-panel podcast, the comic show where the tensions are frying.
Frying?
I don't know why I'm fucking this up tonight. Right, take three. Right. You better not put this in the recording. Harder to Kill than Rob Liefeld's writing. I can't even say it anymore, right? Sorry, I was gonna get a sentence. Harder to Kill than Rob Liefeld's writing career. It's the off-panel podcast, the comic show where the tensions are high and angry.
Wow. Oh, man.
I'm usually so good at this, mate.
Sure you are.
One of my fucking
What's the record for how many times?
For the record. Normally, it takes like at most twice, so he's really going for the record here.
It's the record, right?